It is recording.
Okay.
Just making sure.
Hey, Tony, you're on pressure now. You're on the being recorded.
Oh.
Video? Is it video and audio? Or?
It's recording this and the audio. Oh, it's recording the slides and the audio.
Be careful, because one of the people on the video, Dr. Young, may call you out like 10 years from now about something you said on video.
Yeah, I'll try not to do that. But there was a Raman installation video that I think John's referencing, where anyway.
We were rewatching installation video where somebody said, "This is really easy, I can do it," and like 6 years later we're all trying to do it, nobody can do it. One person's there, "This should be really easy." Whenever you're ready.
All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Good morning, everybody. My name is Nadal Saeed. I am a fourth-year PhD student here at USF in the Department of Chemical and Biomedical Engineering. And this here is Tony Elwell. He's an undergrad.
I'm a junior at USF.
Yep. So today we're going to talk to you about the current progress in our contaminant removal from landfill gas project that is funded by the Hinckley Center for Solid and Hazardous Waste Management. So the basic motivation is, as everybody already knows, fossil fuels are a finite resource. And the U.S. relies heavily on foreign oil, which is not only costly, but it's also non-renewable. So finding a U.S. alternative is crucial. Also, the EPA has set the Renewable Fuel Standard mandate, RFS2. They would like to see 36 billion gallons per year used by the year 2022. In addition, with our increasing emissions, there's an increase in the amount of greenhouse gases being emitted. So we would like to discuss all of these issues. So when we talk about alternative fuels, what alternative fuel sources are being researched right now? Solar energy, wind energy, geothermal energy, nuclear energy, hydrogen energy, biofuels are just some of the types, but also biomass energy, which is what we're most interested in. Biomass energy produces biogas. It comes from agricultural crops, animal waste, sludge digesters, industrial residues, and also municipal solid waste, which is going to be our focus. But regardless of the source of the biogas, it is roughly composed of equal amounts of methane and carbon dioxide. And why I say roughly is you'll see in the next few slides. So as everybody already knows, carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, but what is perhaps less known or less discussed is that methane is also a greenhouse gas. Together, they make more than 92% of all greenhouse gas emissions. But why methane is so important is because man-made methane comes from a variety of different sources. It comes from natural gas and petroleum, enteric fermentation, various processes such as water remediation, but also from landfills. In fact, approximately 18% of all man-made methane emissions comes from landfills. And methane happens to be the second most important greenhouse gas after carbon dioxide. It is 20 times more powerful than CO2 in the sense that it traps energy much more efficiently into the Earth's atmosphere. It's also a feedstock for many processes such as ammonia synthesis, methanol production, and more. And when we're talking about methane emissions, we're talking about approximately 654 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent methane that got emitted in the year 2013. That's a significant number. We would like to utilize that. But again, 18% of the methane is emitted from landfills. That's why we would like to focus our research efforts on that.
That's worldwide.
That is worldwide, actually. So why municipal solid waste? The U.S. generates more than 250 million tons of municipal solid waste per year, and that number continues to increase with increasing population. Most of that goes to landfills. And landfills produce a biogas known as landfill gas. So to give you an idea of the capacity, 1 million tons of municipal solid waste is capable of producing more than 12,000 meters cubed per day of landfill gas, and it can continue that production for up to 30 years. Less than 15% of that is currently used for energy. And being here in Florida, we have an extra added advantage because we produce the most biomass in the U.S., about 7% of the total, to be exact. So basically, how is landfill gas, how can it be used for energy? It can be used for electricity as compressed natural gas, but also for liquid fuels, which was a target area that we previously looked at for previous projects. But it can also be flared. So to change it to liquid fuels using a catalyst is probably the best way. But regardless of the method, we know that the biogas from municipal solid waste has some contaminants in it. That's why I said it's roughly 50% methane and 50% carbon dioxide. It also has some air and some contaminants. And those contaminants pose an issue. The contaminants can be categorized as sulfides, chlorides, organics, or benzenes and things like that, alkanes, mercury compounds, but also siloxanes. And what siloxanes are, you can see here I have two molecules of siloxanes. They are silicon-containing compounds. And why those are very important is because right now they are emerging. More siloxanes are posing more of a risk at this point. Sulfides have been widely discussed because they're used in other industries. Mercury's, the levels are not very significant. It's too low. However, volatile organic compounds can be reformed, but siloxanes pose an issue. I'm sorry, I forgot.
The methyls and the siloxane structures. Yeah, hydrogen.
The methyl groups, yes, the methyl groups. There should be methyl groups on there too. Yes, it's oxygen, methyl groups, and silicon. You're right. So, just doing some searches on Web of Science, you can see that when we look up siloxane and landfill gas, you can see that in the last 20 years, the published items are constantly increasing when it's dealing with siloxanes, and also the citations are increasing. And what that means is that we know that the use of siloxane is increasing because siloxanes are available in our shampoos, they're available in our cell phone cases, and all the soft cases that we use for our tablets and our smart devices. So contaminant regulations are also increasing. Waste to energy tolerance is decreasing or being maintained. So we need a removal technology. So siloxanes can be linear, but they can also be cyclic. And the cyclic ones are a little bit more complex. The methyl groups are right there. The cyclic ones can be more complex. They are in landfill gas. They decompose after several years, so that's why they're starting to become more and more of an issue now as we begin to use these products more and more. So what they do is they cause equipment damage and failure. And for reforming catalysts, they can also deactivate the catalyst. So because they're becoming such a big issue, manufacturers have now limited the amount of siloxanes that are allowed to go through their equipment to 2.8 milligrams per meter cubed. Otherwise, they void the warranty on the equipment. So again, it is a pressing issue. So our overall goals are to evaluate the removal technologies that are currently available, further investigate them for cost effectiveness and waste production. We would like to propose improvements for capital and operating costs, but we also like to determine the effect of contaminants, specifically siloxanes, on the reforming catalyst, which was based on our previous effort where we developed a low temperature dry reforming catalyst. And with that, I am going to hand it over to Tony. He is going to talk a little bit about the approach and some of the results that we have so far before handing it back to me, where I will conclude.
So our approach to modeling these poison catalysts was to simulate accelerated deactivation on the catalyst by using wetness impregnation and taking a precursor and actually dropping it onto the catalyst. And then we chose three different levels of contamination to model, 1 week, 1 month, and 6 months. And what that means is we're saying if you flow, for example, 1 week landfill gas across the catalyst bed, this amount of contaminant will flow through. And we're basing that off of an average from literature is 10 milligrams per meter cubed of gas, and also 2,500 SCFM of landfill gas. So we also have two different methods that we had tested. This, you would think like this would be the most straightforward part, but what we found was the actual poisoning of our catalyst turned out to be a little more challenging than we expected. So our first method was to use siloxanes themselves, which are liquid at room temperature, to poison the catalyst. And then afterwards, we moved on to a different approach, was to use Ludox, which is a silica solution. It's a colloidal silica solution. And you'll see why we did that in the next couple slides. So the first method that we have used was the siloxanes, like I said. And what we did was we took the siloxanes, dissolved them in some ethanol to decrease the viscosity and increase diffusion because they're pretty thick as a liquid. So we did that. We dissolved them and then we added them dropwise with wetness impregnation until incipient wetness, so we saw it was saturated. And then we dried it at 85 Celsius in a furnace. And the hope was to decompose the siloxanes into silica and leave that contaminant on the catalyst and evaporate the ethanol. So as you can see, this picture is what happened. This is afterwards, after we had already added the siloxanes and dried and went through the whole process of adding however much contaminant we were trying to add. So what we ended up seeing was that most of the siloxanes would actually evaporate or leave. And you'll see in the next couple slides, there's a table showing the mass increase of how much actually was left on. And what we expected was to be about a 40% increase, but you'll see in these next slides that that's not what actually happened. So with that method, we had it in a ceramic boat, which is what you see right here, and it was open to the atmosphere. And we decided after that, since they were all evaporating, we were going to keep it in a closed vessel. So the vessel is an autoclave. It's just this Teflon container. It has a cap, and then it goes into a stainless steel, like it has a screw, and then you can tighten it. So it'll keep everything in there, which is what we were trying to do since everything was leaving. So the first, we kept at 85 Celsius. We just wanted to contain all of the siloxanes if they were evaporating, and hopefully we were expecting that they would decompose. And this, what actually happened, well, we weren't actually evaporating them for this case. It kept it all in there, but it didn't decompose the siloxanes. We could see the actual wetness. It's kind of hard to see from this picture, but it's still wet. So we would have like a layer of liquid on the catalyst still. So it wasn't decomposing and it wasn't doing what we were expecting to happen. So we decided to increase the temperature to 200 Celsius, hoping that that would decompose the siloxanes. And I'll explain the levels too. We did the three levels, 1 week, 1 month, 6 months of contamination, but we also, for this method, we varied the combination because we had two siloxanes, one is L2, one is D4. So we chose a linear one and a cyclic one. We wanted to see how the shape was affecting the poisoning, but we also had a third where we had L2 alone, D4 alone, and then both combined in a 50-50 ratio, which would model more what actually was in landfill gas because both of them are in landfill gas. And we chose L2 and D4 because their concentration from literature, we saw that it was the highest in landfill gas out of all the siloxanes. So what we saw though when we went to 200 Celsius was that the L2, the samples with L2 by themselves, they were showing that it decomposed, and the mass increase is on the next slide that you'll see that it was a much better increase. It was actually decomposing. But the D4 was still not decomposing and it was still wet. The samples weren't drying. They were still not fully drying to and decomposing like we expected. So this table is what I was talking about. It shows the actual weight gain. The theoretical weight gain is 40%. And what we were seeing is either no increase or just a couple percentage points. And I wanted to point out the two ceramic boat method is that we had to open to the atmosphere and then we increased the temperature to see if it would decompose. The reason that the first one is zero and the second one is 2.5, you would think they should be pretty similar since in both cases it can evaporate. But what happened was the first method at 85 Celsius, when we were weighing it, when we took it out, it would stick to the ceramic boat, like the actual sample, so we had sample loss. So what we did when we went to 200 Celsius was we changed the way we were weighing the sample and used a different scale and actually weighed the whole thing so we weren't, you know, actually to having to take sample out and move it and having sample loss. But as you can see, it didn't make a difference. It was still nowhere near what we were expecting, which is 40%. And neither were any of the other methods with the siloxanes. The best one was the autoclave exogenous Celsius, which still, after drying it, even for 24 hours, when we were trying to dry it because the D4 was still wet, we tried 24 hours of drying time to see if it would decompose, and we still weren't getting the results we expected.
Which siloxane is this one?
This is L2, and yeah, this is L2, because that's the only one that actually dried fully where we could weigh it appropriately. So this is L2, okay. So this shows the BETs of those, and what BET is just a surface area analysis, and it measures the pore volume, pore diameter, and the surface area. So the top is the fresh catalyst, and it's 31 meters squared per gram. And as you can see, the levels below, like that 2.5 days is 2.5 days of contamination and then 6 months. So we do see a decrease, which is what is expected, that the contaminants will block the pores and decrease the surface area. And you can see that in this table, but what you would also expect is that as you go from 2.5 days to 6 months, that it would decrease even more. So you're adding more contaminants, so you would think that it would be less, but these results are showing that it was kind of a scattered effect. So we weren't seeing the trend that we expected with increasing contamination. But we did see that adding those siloxanes was affecting the catalyst. So we do have a decrease in the properties that we expected, but the trend wasn't adding up to what we had expected. And these are the TPR studies. We studied the L2 is the siloxane in 6 months of contamination with the different methods. This is comparing the TPRs. And what TPR is temperature program reduction. So we vary the temperature while flowing hydrogen over our catalyst bed. And we have a mass spec analyzing the output. So when the catalyst is reduced, it forms water. And this is showing at what temperature the water spikes. And what's expected is that as you add contamination, the level will shift. So it'll have a higher temperature will be required with more contamination added. So as you can see, the orange is the fresh. And you do see a shift, which is what is expected. You see that shift. It takes more energy to actually reduce the catalyst. But since this is the same loading, the same level, 6 months of contamination, it's L2, we are seeing that they were varying. So the different methods that we chose, the autoclave versus the open boat crucible, they were varying. So the crucible took a little more energy to actually reduce. So, but we expected it, since it's the same level, it should be the same. So we could see that the siloxanes are affecting the catalyst, but this method wasn't working for as far as getting consistent results and results that we expected. So this is where we switched to using Ludox, which is the colloidal silica solution, as our precursor. So we just went straight to, after the siloxanes decompose the silica, we just went straight to using silica. So that's what we know that's going to happen based on literature. So we also, the same method was used the wetness impregnation. We added more water to decrease the viscosity and increase the diffusion because Ludox is also pretty viscous. And we used, for this method, we used a ceramic boat. We didn't have to worry about that, the silica evaporating. Since it was a colloidal solution, we didn't have to worry that the silica was going to evaporate itself. So we left it in the open boat and we dried it at 350 Celsius and then calcined it at 600 for 4 hours. And based on this table, you can see that the weight gains that we expected actually were shown. So for 6 months, like I said earlier, it was supposed to be 40% increase, and we saw 38% increase. And then this is showing the other levels of contamination because we went on with 1 month and 1 week after that. And then we can see that we're actually getting much more agreeable results with the Ludox. So it is working. It works. It actually works compared to the siloxanes.
So Ludox contains...
It's silica, yeah, and water.
In your first experiments, you were trying to look at the addition of silica sulfates with the catalyst.
Yeah, we were adding the actual siloxanes, and what happens is they decompose to silica. So we're trying to add the siloxanes and have them decompose right on it. to Civica.
Now you can have both siloxanes and
just Ludox by itself. No. Okay. It's, yeah, sorry. Okay. Just the Ludox. It's just the Civica.
Dissolving siloxanes and Ludox.
No, we're skipping straight to that it already be composed to silica.
This is something they can purchase. Ludox is something we purchase.
Yeah, it's just a colloidal silica solution. So, and then this is the TPRS for those results. The same thing was done, varying the temperature and checking the water signal, see what temperature it reduced. And what was expected is as we increase the level of contamination, that the temperature should shift to the right. So it should be much more difficult to reduce as it's contaminated. And these results show that the orange is the fresh catalyst, 1 week is the blue, and then 1 month of contamination is green, and then you can see the 6 months is the yellow. And the next step for this is to actually, the area under the curve tells us how much water was formed, so how much was actually reduced. And I'm sure you guys can see that the 1 week has a higher temperature, which is counterintuitive to what we're expecting, but we can see that the area under that curve will be greater. So it's saying that it'll be more easily reduced. So that's the next step to show that and actually prove that this agrees with what's expected to happen.
What's the nature of the Ludox solvent? It's suspended, yeah, suspended, so
yeah.
What's the nature of the liquid composition?
Oh, it's just water.
Oh, it's just water. What percentage? Yeah. What percentage of water?
Oh, it's 40%.
Like 20 or 40%.
20 to 40%.
So it's like a colloid of like a certain fairly small size with like 20 or 50 nanometer.
So there are no surfactants or anything.
No, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just silicon.
It's 28%.
And this slide is showing the XRDs, just X-ray diffraction. To show the diffraction patterns of the catalyst when it's not poisoned versus when it is poisoned, to see if there are any peak shifts or any new peaks or anything like that. And what's expected when silica is on there is you see these tails. It's the degradation at the lower two thetas around 20. You see how the top on the right diagram is the fresh catalyst, and it's just really flat, as you can see. And then as you go down to 1 week, there's that tail kind of degradation going on. So that's due to the presence of silica. It's highly amorphous, so it doesn't have any diffraction peaks, but due to the fact that it's there and it's amorphous, it causes that. So we're showing this to compare how on the left is when we use siloxanes themselves, and then on the right is when we use Ludox. And what we should expect is what's happening with the Ludox, that even at low levels of contamination, you see that degradation. But as you can see on the left, even the 6 months, you can slightly see it. Down at the bottom, the 6 months down here, you see it slightly has that degradation, but it's nowhere near what it should be. So that's showing that with the method with siloxanes, it wasn't working. We weren't actually getting the contamination on our catalyst. And with Ludox, we are. So now Nada is going to continue with this name.
Okay. Thank you, Tony.
Before you leave, I'm going to ask, the 1 week, 1 month, 6 months, is that the time period of just the catalyst sitting in a fixed solution, or is that passing over?
Yeah, if you had the actual process going on and you flowed the landfill gas for a week, some amount of contaminants would go through the bed. So that's what that's based off of. That much contaminant after 1 week of flow. And we base that on the concentration of 10 milligrams per meter cube, which is average in literature of siloxanes.
So these are not really times or in the experiment times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no, it's just an accelerated deactivation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That would flood it.
Mm-hmm. And then we accelerated the deactivation.
There used to be such little siloxanes if we did just like a conventional test that they'd run it for like 2 weeks.
For a long time, yeah.
Really 2 weeks.
It might be helpful to include also the amounts. And start one month, what the quantity of solids and
wait
over that period of time.
I think you said that you did 10 milligrams of silica per meter cube, you did 2,500
standard
SCFM. Yeah, so you got me lost with metric units. All right.
we then went ahead and did SEM EDS on the LUBAC sample. So for the 1 month sample, we expected to have approximately 10% of silica on there, and we did have about 8%. And of course, we did this on many different points in the house. I'm only showing one, and it did average to about 8%, depending on regardless of which point we did. I'm only showing one as an example. Then we went ahead and did SEM EDS also on the 6 month sample, and we should have had roughly 40%. So this particular point had 39.8%. It varied from about 37% to 40% depending on the point. What I want to point out is you can even see from the SEM image, the silica is very bright, very white, versus the 1 month wasn't as bright. And you can even see it from the pictures the pictures weren't very good quality, but the silica is very visible on there, on the catalyst. So to summarize where we've been, what we have right now. So we know for sure that the catalyst is adversely affected by the presence of silica. The extent of the effect is still under investigation. We're still going to do some reaction studies where we simulate landfill gas with the poison catalyst to see where our production of syngas is. Poisoning the catalyst using LUDOX was better than poisoning it starting with the siloxanes. Once we fully understand this and we finish these studies, we are going to evaluate the regeneration technologies and the removal technologies. And with that, I would like to thank everybody who joined us remotely and everybody who's here in the audience. I'd like to thank the Hinckley Center, the TAG members, and these are some of our funding sources. Tony has a research experience funding, and he has an award for research. I have a fellowship by USF, and I have a fellowship from the Florida Space Grant Consortium. So with that, I would like to open the floor up for questions, and thank you.
And you want to start with some questions, or should you have somebody to solicit? I've been calling right now, and holding the microphone. You can ask them directly.
Okay. Dr. Young?
Yes. Hi, Nada.
Hi, Dr. Young. You're the only one whose mic is on, so.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I guess some questions for your, like the deactivation and some of those pictures, it looks pretty striking. I guess you'll have a speculation about, like, how the deactivation might be working, whether it's physical blocking or if it's exclusively on the active sites, or I don't know. Do you have any ideas about what sort of, the mechanism for deactivation by the siloxanes?
So we know that there is physical blocking because the molecules are bigger than the pores of our catalyst. So we know that. But in terms of the exact mechanism, we're going to study that. This is something that we've talked about, and we actually want to do that. But we know for sure that there is at least the physical aspect of it.
Okay.
The physical blockages in the pore analysis, pore size, pore blockage?
Just from looking at it, just from physically looking at it, we know for sure that the surface is completely covered. So that's basically, we're fairly certain that that's happening. But from absorption studies, we should be able to see from our pore volume and pore diameter the blockage. But we're going to continue physisorption studies. This is not physisorption studies on the LUDOX samples.
I think this is that table you just had up there. We fairly consistent. You have some decrease in total pore volume, so you're blocking some whole pores, and also you're making some of the pores smaller. Maybe both are happening or some variation of them.
So the big picture is that we know that siloxane is harmful to
Right.
And the question, I think the question you're trying to address is, are there also concerns about conversion of benzo gas to syngas, which is additive?
Right.
And so you've modeled using silicon, and which is using siloxane. Are we moving too far away from the real problem by doing using silica instead of the siloxane? And what about the, of course, the benzo gas has a complex mixture contaminants. Is there any way to more directly look at the effect of landfill gas as a whole with mercury and other things in there? To poison catalyst, I know you said the concentration of siloxane is so low that you take too long to see it, but it seems like that's the main problem. If it's so low that it's not going to be able to be detected, then maybe it's not a problem. So I wonder, what about looking at landfill gas through the catalyst to see the poison in it?
So to answer your question, there are two things that I can say. So no, we haven't moved away from the big picture of the siloxanes, because the siloxanes ultimately decompose into the silica. So we just wanted to start off with the siloxane. We knew that it was going to decompose to silica anyway. So silica is the problem. The siloxane is just a precursor.
We know that decomposition occurs in oxygen.
Yes.
In catalyst, however, you're not running oxygen to the
So I'm not exclusive. I'm not running oxygen through it. However, when I'm reducing it, there is oxygen there. When I'm doing reforming, I can do triforming, which I can't add oxygen to it. And if I'm going to simulate landfill gas, not ideally, not just flowing CO2 and methane, then I will include a little bit of oxygen.
I think your assumption is strong that there's probably going to be big decomposition of siloxanes to silica in the catalyst water. But it's an assumption, still an assumption.
At this point, yes, but we know that the siloxanes are not the issue, that the silica is the issue. It comes from the siloxanes, but it's still the silica. That's where the issue is. That's what deactivates the turbines and the engine. And yes, it happens at high temperatures, but if ultimately we want this to be a full process, then we are going to be using high temperatures, and our catalyst is going to be subjected to high temperatures.
So. Might be possible to conduct at least maybe 1 week type experiment in which we pass siloxane contaminated gas through your catalyst. I think that 3 times to run long experiments, but perhaps it might be worthwhile, even if it is not totally continuous, intermittent, start-stop type activities in terms of time.
We can try to modify our existing setup and bubble siloxanes through the catalyst in a continuous fashion.
Maybe at a higher concentration, perhaps, to simulate an accelerated rate of.
We thought that the 6 months one was very, very high, because regardless, the catalyst would have to be regenerated or would have to be switched out in a real situation.
Six,
but
6 months seems to be appropriate, because that's where they are detecting a lot of silica deposition on the turbines, right?
Right. But it's a possibility that we can bubble the siloxanes through. And
so some people, I don't even have references here, are doing, I think with long lines, what you're saying, they're using a very cheap material and they're putting that in at like 600 degrees Celsius to just fill them, basically just makes that material blasty and then they throw it away when it fills out. And they see the same assumptions he has with that. But I think when they do the lab test, they did it at very high concentrations. You guys remember the concentrations? It's that Pinocchio paper with one of them.
It was a very, very high concentration.
It was at least 10 times higher than what we used for our calculations.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah. is about sometimes what we're using. So definitely.
Yeah, might be worthwhile to at least have one such experiment to kind of validate what your approach, the assumption that you've taken, right? So it's a big assumption.
Definitely. Definitely available.
So part of your study is also to look at the existing chain-out methods. So are the existing methods for sending out LACO gas sufficient to pre-filter the gas for catalysts, or is that part of what we're studying here?
That's part of what we're studying. So there are scrubbing technologies, and there are at least three different technologies that are being used, but we haven't seen anything that specifically looks at the catalyst deactivation. So it scrubs sulfides, it scrubs some things. It's mostly silica that's doing the scrubbing at high temperatures, and then there's a cooling process, there's another cooling process, and things like that. But nothing specifically just looked at deactivation of the catalyst. And if we want this to be a whole process where we're reforming the landfill gas to have the catalyst and we're doing all kinds of things, then this is something that we need to look at that we haven't seen in literature yet.
I know that landfill gas is with the water during the chill. I assume that also takes up some of the dioxin. So I wonder if that's enough, or if there's still some left after the chill.
There's still some left.
There's going to be.
For the catalyst, we don't know if it's in low enough value or not yet. We have the papers on that. I forget how much comes out when we're ready.
I just know it wasn't as good as active carbon mixed with gel.
Yeah, they were putting on a polishing step after that.
It wasn't even 50%. That was
horrible. And what were these in the last one for the last four?
It was for electricity generation. That's a little bit exact. There's a handful of papers on the one. You guys know what they're doing?
One was for fuel cells. They used something for fuel cells.
Yeah.
I think it wasn't anything like this, it was electricity. But I remember one specific was for these guys.
Oh. I have a question about just kind of some strategies for the catalyst regeneration. It seems like silica, is pretty stable compound if it is in that form on the catalyst. I mean, do you think it would be some sort of like thermal, like gas treatment regeneration, or are you thinking like an immersion, some sort of solvent, or I don't know.
To regenerate.
To regenerate the catalyst.
We would likely use probably heat treatment. Probably to high temperatures.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
What temperature would the silica decompose?
Oh, so the decomposal at very high temperatures. We'll have a scrubbing. Very rare.
We probably have to try some dissolution technique. Okay. What will dissolve to look at?
Some basic water. Okay. Dissolve it, but that may harm the catalyst too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you guys make the series of funny what pH does it precipitate? I don't know.
It's
nice.
What's the one I'm going to say? Somewhere there.
It's the silica will dissolve under slightly basic conditions. Maybe there's a window in between there.
The better solution is not to put the silica on the panels.
That's what we're hoping to do.
We can usually replace or throw away the catalyst after 1 year. It's reasonably low priced, but we can do that. But we'd like to at least run for a year. Removing the contaminant levels to the point where it can run for a year without losing activity would be desirable.
Dr. Young, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
So this is technique, I wasn't thinking of that through.
Okay.
Do you have any more questions?
No, I don't. No, I think it's a cool project. And,
So fine, I never.
Sulfides are bad. The tolerance of those are fairly well known for these type of catalysts, around 50 ppm. So we already know we have to remove a fair amount of the sulfide, otherwise we're in big trouble.
I would say mercury, but mercury is in very small concentrations. The volatile organics, they can be reformed. So, I mean, there's basically a solution for everything, for most of the family. Depending on the landfill, of course, and the contaminants and things like that, but there's at least some level of solution for something, but nothing for the siloxane.
So there's been some studies done on removing siloxane using activated charcoal, or maybe even silica itself, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
So there's only a handful of papers on that, and like Dr. Kung said, there was for electricity generation, and they did use that, but they didn't remove all of it. It wasn't 100% removal at the end of it. But yeah, it was activated carbon, it was silica, there was a chilling process, and there's two more people, but they're muted.
Let me just ask if they have any questions.
Does anybody else have any questions from those who are remotely joining? I'm not muted.
Doesn't look like it.
So what's next? New research.
So the next step, we would like to continue testing the Ludox and checking to see the reactions. So we'd like to simulate landfill gas and flow it through the poison catalyst. We have thought about actually flowing siloxanes onto the catalyst, and I see this is there's a strong, a lot of people want this to happen, so we're gonna test that, but we're also going to look at the removal technologies and then simulate it, and then probably do a large-scale removal technology to test that, specifically with the silica poison catalyst. So we thought that this part of the research wasn't going to take a long time, but as is the case with research, what we think versus versus what happens, two different things. So
yeah, I think that's a good plan moving forward. I think it will be kind of important to show the detrimental effect on the catalytic activity based on the silica poisoning. So I think, yeah, I think you're proceeding down the right path, so that's good.
Thanks, Dr. Yang.
Yeah. In science, we kind of tightly control the variables in experiments, so we know what we're doing, we know the answers to the problems and so on. But in engineering, we like to throw in what's a real world. So it's a nice mix, I think, to solve the problems in both science and real world.
Sometimes things don't cooperate the way we want them to, and that's okay, because we try to figure it out after that. That's the point.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a nice morning.
Thank you. Sam Levine, and he just left, and Oswald is still there. No, he just signed off.
You said, you're done recording now.